Are you gay?
Geeky?
Just enjoy hearing your good Judy's dish about the latest in pop culture?
Well, then you're in luck.
The boys of Flame On are here for you.
In every episode, we discuss the topics that entrance us.
Whether it's comics, TV,
movies,
drag queens,
or video games,
we've got you covered.
So, if you're ready for your gay and geeky slice of pop culture life,
then sit back and get ready to
Flame On!
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's going on, everybody? We are back again. Myself.
I mean, listen, when Pat does it, it's like, all right, I guess that's his thing. But, you know, that's his thing, not your thing. That's his thing. And really, it's thank you. And really, it's not even his thing. It's what's her name, right? Not Shangela. Is it Shangela or is it? I think it's Shangela.
Think it's Shangela.
I don't know. Someone can yell at us. They are currently yelling at us as they're listening. So yes.
I was gonna say we did get yelled at. So just to start it all over again. I am BJ, and obviously you heard Brian. And hey, we are back again with any other Doctor Who microsode for special number 2, Wild Blue Yonder. But we did actually get a message on one of our socials. It's pronounced Russell T. Davies, not Davis.
Even so, though okay.
Like Davis.
And I am telling you right now, that's what I used to think. And I'm not saying that this is definitive. However, the Doctor Who podcast said, the official one, I'm not talking about ours or like, you know, whatever, the official BBC with Russell T. whatever, we'll just call him Russell T. on the show, they said Davis. So now maybe it's their accent, because I looked at it and sure enough, it looks like it's spelled Davies. But anyway, all that to say, if that's the only thing you're yelling at us about, then we're doing fine.
It was so funny too, because I was like, oh, I have a message on Instagram. And then I was like, I was like, oh, a message on our Flame On Instagram. And what's funny is normally it's just spam. And I was like, oh, cool. What weird deal or like phishing scam do we have today? And it was actually somebody who, of course, my phone is on the other side of the room charging.
They messaged me too. So yes, thank you. And I'm sorry I forgot your name already. Someone from California, but thank you. And I think it's still unclear as mud how he says his name. So now the trick will be, dear listener and or BJ or myself, to scour the archives of the internet and video to find somebody saying it. And like, he actually like confirms it or hear him say it himself. I don't know. I won't be doing this, by the way. I say that this is a thing we should do. I will not be doing this, but it is left to an exercise. I always screw this up. It is left as an exercise for the listener. So good luck. And don't
for a second there, I thought you were saying it was going to be left for the exorcist.
It'll be left for the exorcist. Russell Crowe, the Pope's exorcist. That's what we're leaving. Anyway, so all that to say, yeah, Russell T. And I'm glad somebody listened. I mean, that's the biggest thing. Honestly, when you get those kind of things, you're like, hey, I'm just glad you listened. Yeah, that's fine. Thank you for that. But yeah.
Well, no, yeah, it was one of those things where I was just like, because like I actually had some coworkers find our podcast and start listening. And then they were like, there's this guy on this podcast that sounds just like you. And I was like, what podcast is it? And they were like, I think it's called Flame On Podcast. And I was like, I there was no like hiding. I was like, and she was like, is that you? I was like, yeah, he got me. I was not mentally prepared for somebody at work to be like, I found your podcast.
This is your current job, not your previous?
This is my current job. Honestly, if somebody in my previous job found it, whatever, more power to them. Maybe they'll get some culture. but no, it's works. It's a really fun group of people, and I love them. And sometimes I lay awake at night scared to go to sleep because I'm afraid that I'm actually living a dream and I'm going to wake up back in Florida.
Oh, gross.
Working. It's very scary. But speaking of terrifying, the new episode of Doctor Who, holy fucking shit. My heart rate jumped way too high. My watch was like, are you working out? And I was like, no. Yeah, I was very curious about this episode because when they released trailers for the three specials, this was the only trailer. It said Wild Blue Yonder, and then every clip they showed in the trailer said redacted. And I was terrified. I was like, why is this redacted? And honestly, they made the right call because good God, I was floored. So we'll go last time. I think we started with what we didn't like. Our grumblings is what we did last time. This time we'll start with what we liked, and I'm going to go first. Honestly, I love the Lovecraftian of it all. Like this was on par with Midnight. It was very much on par with Midnight because Midnight, none of that episode went from like kind of cutesy, just like nothing episode to just an outright horror of like humanity and how everybody reacts to the unknown. But in this one, it was purely just Donna and the Doctor.
I think it was a delightful focus on those two actors, pretty much to the exclusion of everybody else, except the very attractive gentleman who played Isaac Newton in the opening little moment, and somebody else, I think he's talking to his wife or his girlfriend or somebody.
Hot Newton. I love Hot Newton so much.
And hot and not white, thankfully. And I know that, as we talked about last week, and I have since been hearing more grumblings, not that I expose myself to that part of the society and internet is, I try to avoid it at all costs, but yeah, the people out there who are grumbling about like the trans representation of Doctor Who, and then now, oh my God, Sir Isaac Newton's, what is he? I don't even know what he was. He's not white.
I believe the actor is Nathaniel Curtis. Wow, actually, he is very attractive. No, he's
very, very not my type in terms of his skinniness. Like, let's just be honest. He's not necessarily, you know, what we're going for, but
like right out the gate. So he hasn't done much acting. He was in It's a Sin.
Yes. That's where Russell T, obviously most recently worked with him. And as you will see, if you go back specifically to Russell, but others too, if they're in a production of one of their whatevers prior to a Doctor Who, it's a pretty good chance they're on the shortlist for the Doctor or a companion, or in this case, a role like this. But I wouldn't be surprised if this actor had been on the casting, like, you know, if he had been asked to audition or whatever, because that, what was Russell David? Russell did RTD, I could also say. He did Second Coming, which featured Chris Eccleston before he did the Doctor Who reboot. And he did Casanova, which had David Tennant before he took over as the Doctor. So, you know, you see this quite often. But of course, like, why not? You know, you'd like working with somebody, you know, they're a good actor, then why not? Right. But so I'm loving the fact that they did that. I think the joke about Mavity, not gravity anymore, but Mavity, was pretty funny. It's like a very Douglas Adamsian kind of, you know, time travel. Ha ha, you know, you've just changed time, whatever. And it's funny that they then used it a couple times throughout the episode. Like that was cute. Oh, that was fun. Those were moments because of the episode's otherwise sometimes dark and foreboding baseline that actually were really nice punches of humor. Yes. So I do appreciate that balance when in whatever writer, but Russell does it very well. So you like the Lovecraft stuff. Of course you did. Cause you're yourself, right?
I'm a horror gay. But also just the fact that it came out so hard. Like you were aware that wasn't the Doctor and Donna, but honestly, I was shocked how long it took me to realize that it wasn't really the doctor she was talking to. And it wasn't until like Donna walked into the other room, I was like,
You knew something was going on because the way they cut between those two rooms and what they were doing, mm-hmm. it didn't make sense after the first cut, because like the doctor basically has Donna doing some weird, you know, task, right? And the doctor goes off and does a different weird task. And so I think the first time you see Donna come over and talk to the doctor, and then you're like, all right, that's fine, whatever. And then you see they cut back and you see that the other side of it. So you're like, okay, unless there's some weird time travel or something nonlinear going on with time. Yeah, there's something going on. And then you're like, wait a minute, this is a doppelganger or something.
Yeah,
like.
And then it becomes a Cronenberg nightmare.
Well, I think that's funny too, because like very CG, like there's definitely a few moments in this episode where you're like, wow, that's CG, and wow. And then there's a couple episodes with the body morphing stuff that you're like, oh, that's CG. I'm thinking of when they grow very large, and then one of them's eyes is really large. I'm like, you know, it's Disney, but that's not always the same.
The jaw.
Different levels of Disney budgets, you know.
But they actually had body doubles.
Do you watch the behind-the-scenes stuff?
Yeah, they had two body doubles for the doctor, and then they had one body double for Donna. And I was like, ooh, I actually really appreciated that, because I think it was the scene where the doctor like flips like on his back and starts crawling after her. It gave me there's actually a body contortionist that was on The Flash, and he was on America's Got Talent, and he plays Ragdoll. And it's one of those things where I never thought about just hiring somebody that, you know, can contort their body in this day and age, but it actually makes a huge difference. Because like you said, there are those moments where the CG was just like, oh, okay. And then there are moments where like he's crawling after Donna, and I was like, nope, I don't like that. That's
well, yeah. And several times the doctors, so the void sent the, Eldritch Horrors or whatever the nameless, what are they called? The no things, not nothing, but no things, which is pretty great. There's moments in it where, they like the doctor specifically, the doctor no thing, like does this very feral beast like running, which thinking about it, I will say if they were copying them, I guess they had their memories, like they weren't copying them by doing that. Wasn't even a bad copy. That was like them channeling a memory of a beast. But again, like that kind of follows because, you know, spoilers, of course, with all of this, the culmination involved somewhat the doctor basically saying, don't think about anything. Don't think about the pink elephant in the room. You know, don't do that. And then it sort of starves them, which is what you find out kind of, or we piece together that the captain of this giant corridored ship, some kind of a colony ship, transport ship at the edge of the impossible edge of the universe, like that basically they space themselves to keep these creatures from copying them and fully being able to just, you know, impersonate them. And then this, of course, gimmick with the very, very, at first, we're not sure what's going on, but the very, 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 very slow countdown to an explosion by the very cute little robot that also kind of had a little, I'm thinking more of the Douglas Adams, the Hitchhiker's movie they did.
Yeah.
Not the TV version, but like, you know, this little Marvin, our android guy, you know, slowly walking to hit the shiny candy-like button that explodes the whole
ship. I felt like that had to have been on purpose. Like 100%, that there's no doubt in my mind that like mini Marvin bot was somebody channeling their Hitchhiker's Guide feels.
It's something. I mean, it's a cute design. I did wish that the robot had more point, but I mean, the point was pretty important and necessary. Yeah. So, I mean, I think I've just rattled off a couple things that I certainly not like. I don't know. What else did we like?
So another thing just to go back with the wokeness, another thing was the fact that Donna was just kind of like, Sir Isaac Newton is kind of hot. And the doctor immediately going, yeah. And then going, oh, is that how I am? But what's funny to me is that it was David Tennant a long time ago. And I think it was when they introduced Captain Jack and Jack was traveling with them.
It was Jack and Eccleston,
and they're just like, well, he's, you know, all about all sorts of like he's a man of the 31st century, and then Eccleston's just like, or Time Lord, like, so the Doctor's always been very fluid, but also the Doctor isn't like a relationship, sexual like charged being generally, so. Yeah.
It's like, a tricky thing with the Doctor and sexuality, because I know some people who have watched Doctor Who are kind of like, this is boring. Why don't they have sex? Why is there no tension? And so some writers more than others have played with that notion that the Doctor has a somewhat, you know, not sexual necessarily, but has somewhat of a relationship. And I think most notably with, like, you know, River Song as mm-hmm. his wife, and not just in that, you know, weird, ridiculous plot thing that Stephen Moffat wrote about the fact that why she is his wife and all that stuff, but in like that one night, the last night they spend with each other. And it's this, you know, hundreds of years or however long it's the last night.
It's like 20, a night on, Deryllium lasts 27 years.
Yeah. So I mean, like, but I mean, you know, okay. So it's delightfully ambiguous what they did with that 27 years. And even Capaldi's little eyebrow raise doesn't say explicitly whatever, but back to your point and the whole woke, you know, whatever. I don't even consider this woke, 'cause it's just kind of obvious. Not even, it's like subtext, yeah. But like obvious, like if the Doctor can be a man and a woman and is inherently non-binary in that way, or gender fluid, let's just say, of course he could potentially be attracted to either. I think what's really nice is that they just full throated said it. They didn't leave it as the Tennant or Eccleston's little, I think the first time they did it was when Jack met Eccleston and Rose. And I think, what's his name? The Doctor was jealous of Rose flirting with Jack. Like, it was something about, like, I want to dance too. And I'm, if Pat were here, he'd remember exactly the moment we're talking about. But I think, yeah, that was, of course, Russell as well. So, yeah, the queering up of Doctor Who is certainly not new, but also it makes sense. Doesn't have to even, like, whatever you want to call it, it just makes sense, right?
And so. it's just like a conversation between friends. It's very, but I do like. I was going to say that right there, I thought it was really cute, especially they're just walking down the corridor, chatting with each other, chilling. And she's just kind of like, I knew it. And then the other thing that I know will be controversial, because not really a lot of people liked it. I thought I liked it, but the execution I felt was a little bit messy. They did not completely ditch a lot of what happened in the last season.
Oh yeah. The flux.
And they made a slight reference to the timeless child, where Donna's double is like, he's like Gallifrey, and Donna's just like, well, you don't really know where you're from. And then he's mm-hmm. like, kind of looks at her, and then she's just like, that's weird. And so this idea that like it was a very controversial thing in the last showrunner did, but they are still kind of holding on to little bits of it. I love the, because I loved Flux. Flux was fantastic.
Yeah. I think and Flux is Chibnall's best season, and it's the most cohesive, and it's, is there implications as far as the Doctor's true nature? Yeah. But I mean, honestly, even that whole beat isn't brand new. The Seventh Doctor had this whole sort of subtext sort of thing in the background where he could be the other, and that's somebody very old and special and sort of instrumental to the founding of the Time Lords, and they never resolved it because it got canceled. But there's always been this idea, there's been frequently, it's been sort of played with, especially in the books and the audio dramas. Like, the Doctor has played with this idea, or he has been not just any Time Lord, but something more. And so saying he's the Timeless Child, and that's where the Time Lords got their origin. I mean, whatever. I did not like it at the time. I thought it was kind of what? Like, I just didn't like it. Now, I don't hate it as much. I think if I had to pick anything I hate, it's that they keep trashing Gallifrey and killing off the Time Lords after Moffat brought it all back with a nice little maneuver and then kind of got to play with it. To me, it's like, why would you take this giant toy that is the Time Lords of Gallifrey, this whole series and set of possible things to play with in your story, and just summarily go, nope, they're all Cybermen now, they're all dead. Now, to say that, though, it is possible, and Russell did this in when he killed off the Time Lords originally. He brought him back for that end of time special when Tennant regenerated. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you can.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Always bring them back. And there's always... story hijinks and things you can do. So I've just kind of made peace with it all. And I do appreciate, I think Chibnall said this too in an interview. He's like, what matters the most to a Doctor Who showrunner, writer, whatever, is that your impact, your changes, your contributions to the history, the mythos, that you see them, if you see them or when you see them down the road with another showrunner, it means that it wasn't just fan fiction, because all three of them have basically agreed that the Doctor that they write to them is fan fiction, or not. But when they're not running it anymore, since they're all three, and I'm talking about the three, you know, current, last three, you know, since the reboot, like they love Doctor Who so much that they want it to be real, but they don't feel like it's real. So anyway, all that to say, Chibnall thrilled. And, you know, even though, again, I don't think his seasons were the greatest, I think Jodie Whittaker was wasted in a lot of ways as far as an amazing Doctor, but the Flux solid, I think, end to end, maybe with a couple little whatevers. So,
well, and it's that guilt, the fact that the Doctor feels responsible for like a third of reality, physical reality, being decimated, which was, I actually liked the kind of like how the entire universe didn't get destroyed, but it definitely got fucked up. And the idea that technically what happened with the Flux caused maybe the edge of the universe to get that much closer, and that there's things out there muddling about in the void that could kind of like inch on into reality if you're not too careful or if you go too far out there. So I like this idea that there's the consequences. This was a consequence I didn't really think about when I was watching Flux, and this wasn't really a consequence that wasn't something that had kind of, because in my head I'm like, you've already got Lovecraftian type like cryptid aliens, like, you know, the weeping angels that you have to worry about, but just something coming out of the void, you know, that can eventually copy somebody so perfectly that even the TARDIS is like, not dealing with that.
So, we didn't really talk about that, and I don't know if that's something I like or not, but the fact that the TARDIS did this thing where, which I think it's definitely done before,
it absolutely has
runs away. If it's something that's very scary for it, and not just scary and like, oh, it's scared, but firmly and profoundly dangerous about, sorry, my earbuds are doing weird things. But yeah, like the I'm trying to think of the other time they used this, but the Hads.
They used it, it was Jodie's first episode.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it was Jodie's first episode. So it didn't run away, but there was some sort of issue where it got separated. And technically they were on the same planet. It was just out of phase, and it just happened that the Doctor was able to find it. And I know it happened in Blink, where the Doctor got separated from it. He got shunted out to a different timeline by the angels. So he had to figure out a way to actually get the TARDIS to come back to him. So it's been in Blink. That's the other episode that's kind of similar to this one. So it's the, and like, even with Midnight, the TARDIS there, he couldn't just call it. Like, well, it was one of those things.
You have to find a way sometimes to write around the fact that he can always just leave. And sometimes you have to use it as a thing to propel it forward, and you do something different. But like, I do appreciate that. I will say, and this isn't a disappointment. Well, it is a disappointment. This isn't a criticism of the episode. I think when this episode was discussed online, or, you know, by the producers at one point, there was this shroud of mystery around it, and things, like you said, were redacted and all this stuff. And in my head, I remember saying, the one thing I took away from it was, you just wait, this episode is going to be like all about the TARDIS and really get to explore this really like out there space. And I just kept thinking it was in the TARDIS. And so everything up until about a week ago, I was really excited because I was like, oh man, it's gonna be a brand new TARDIS and something's going to happen, and spills coffee, you know, on the console, and they're going to be stuck in this like crazy messed up TARDIS. Cause I do really enjoy the episodes, and there's very relatively few where they do spend time in the TARDIS, not just in the console room, right? The Neil Gaiman episode that we referred to last week, that there was that whole, I think we talked, I think we were talking about that, right?
It was the TARDIS.
The Doctor's Wife is the title?
Yes. Yes. And it was some creature pushes out essentially the TARDIS's mind or essence into like a body it built, and it takes over the TARDIS. And you've got Rory and Amy stuck in this TARDIS that's now been taken over by this thing. And then you have the actual soul of the TARDIS essentially can communicate with the Doctor and the body of this makeshift body of a woman. That was another one where like they kind of write with the TARDIS as like, not really the antagonist, but the issue of the TARDIS not being readily available is part of the issue of the episode.
Yeah. I guess what I was saying in the similarities is I love those episodes that play with the TARDIS, and the fact that at the end they're in the TARDIS, but the TARDIS is controlled by Michael Sheen's voice, disembodied voice, and like a house, and he's like messing with them, and they're running through corridors and all this cool stuff. Anyway, so all that to say, I thought, and this was a disappointment, not a criticism of the episode, I thought that that's what this kind of episode would be. I was not disappointed with seeing Catherine Tate and David Tennant playing two different versions of their characters, and seeing that just, you know, episode in a bottle or whatever, story in a bottle, like the closed room adventure, or whatever. Like, I just, that was nice. The only other like piece to that, I'll put a little asterisk next to is, given that there's three specials, I guess maybe it, you feel like there'd be more of an arc, or there'd be more of a epic thing for each episode, not just the first and the last one, which it definitely seems like this last one, we'll talk about the giggle from the previews, it is going to be the epic, you know, big showstopper, right? But so to speak, but like it is a bold choice in the second of these epic specials to sort of go down tempo a bit and explore this, like, you know, Lovecraftian, what's the movie that everyone always, the sci-fi one where they're off the end of space or something, or they go to Event Horizon.
I was literally about to say Event Horizon, where the ship went through a wormhole and ended up going through hell and then coming back.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, that, it's a bold choice that Russell did to do that.
Yeah.
But again, you got such a gift, and it's also sort of a nice character moment, because you really do get to explore Donna's relationship with the Doctor through different lenses. So that was also kind of a nice moment. And again, having the Doctor have a breakdown. I mean, I don't think the Doctor typically has those moments in his life where he is just profoundly furious and frustrated and sad and just lets it out, and then has like a vulnerable moment where he later is like, I'm not okay, but I will be in like however long. So, I mean, those were nice beats. I think more than anything, that's what I enjoyed of the episode. So yeah, not a bad episode, you know.
Yeah. Just my last little No, not at all. My last little cherry on top for my happy beats is the fact that you got a final performance from Bernard Cribbins as Grandad. I squealed because I didn't think they had were able to film anything with him before he passed away. And when she opened the door and it shows him sitting there, I was like, ah, my roommate was like, you good, bro.
I wasn't sure when they were going to show him, but I knew that he was at the table read that they did. And I knew he had filmed something. So I didn't know when. And I'm just so happy before he passed away that he got that moment. Though there is a behind the scenes video on YouTube there, he's talking about it. He's very professional and very almost detached from the special nature of everything. Mm-hmm. And because this dude, Bernard Cribbins, was in Doctor Who, the Pershing era, which, if you don't know, there was a Doctor Who movie. Actually, I think there was two of them with the guy who played from Star Wars. It's what's his name? Well, Peter Cushing, but he played Grand Admiral, not Thrawn. Moff Tarkin. Oh my gosh, Moff Tarkin. He played him, and this guy who played that horrible whatever in Star Wars, horrible, but you know, villain. It was the Doctor in these movies, and Bernard Cribbins was in one of them, and was like, that was from like the second Doctor era, kind of sort of like in the late 60s, I think early 70s maybe. But so yeah, he's got a grand long tradition of Doctor Who, and it's really nice that they had that moment. I hope there's a little bit more of it like in the next episode, but I honestly, if that's all we get of him, then that's okay.
I like I said, I didn't see any of the behind the scenes stuff till after I watched the episode, so like it was a legitimate happy shock for me. I was like, oh my god. And I teared up a little bit, because honestly, it was something about the Noble family, like the entire family, I absolutely love. They're just, all of those characters are so well written. Like, even Donna's husband is so funny. It's really cute. So were there any critiques you had? Or anything you particularly was like, no.
I think the CG was the only thing that I was not like overly like, again, in very small moments, otherwise look great. No, I mean, it's a down tempo episode, or it's a different type, but that's the beauty of Doctor Who, is it's got so many different styles and, you know, ways that it can express itself as a show, that I guess if it had been three specials of all epic, that might have been honestly too much. So maybe in that way, having like that Star Beast kind of moment where it's a kind of a caper, but there's stakes, but it also sort of serves the plot of getting everybody back together, getting the band back together. And then you have this kind of like bottle episode with character moments. Yeah, no, I mean,
yeah,
I, I'm, I think if there's anything in my brain that's negative, it's just that. And then again, the disappointment because of the whole secrecy thing, which again,
because of your own expectations.
Right. It's expectation management. That happens all the time. Honestly, that happens a lot with Doctor Who, because there's a lot of times where the, especially when they do a cliffhanger and there's this big mystery and they're trying, you're trying to solve it all and you're trying to put all the pieces together. And then your solution or your thought about like, oh, well, it's because the blah, 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 like this, like the name of the doctor stuff. Oh my God. There were so many theories about, well, why, what's the name of the doctor? Why is he blah, blah, blah? What's going on? And then the actual like explanations were like, oh, oh, that's it. Like, like the resolutions in Doctor Who on average are a little underwhelming, but this case, I think actually the resolution was pretty good. And I actually, I will say this too. And I swear this is it. I really appreciated the thing about the end where, again, we spoiled everything else. The doctor almost leaves Donna to blow up on the ship and only at like the last minute, like, you know, realizes and calls it and saves the right Donna. Like that one was, that was a genuine, like, oh my God, that almost happened. And they milked that moment for all they could. So
that's my one thing. I didn't. So it's not that I didn't like it. It's that I felt personally victimized by it. I will, if I ever see WTD or RTD, if I ever see RTD ever in my life, I will be like, you're fantastic. I love you. You're a great showrunner. You're a great writer. But if you ever in your life pull that shit again, because here's the thing, I flashed. It took me right back to that episode where they found out that Amy was a flesh double and she had actually been kidnapped for like half the season. And I was like, oh, well, fuck you. And then the fact they did the same thing to her baby, I was like, and as soon as I saw this, I was like, let me tell you what, you fuck with the Noble family again ever? Do not, like, the idea of him taking some Eldritch Horror and dropping it off with Rose and Sean, and I'd be like, I can't watch this. But literally the whole, I was on the edge of my seat, my heart rate was elevated, and I will say the reaction the doctor had where he turns around and looks at her and goes, your arms are too long, and then flips the switch, and now the TARDIS has an ejector platform.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, abso-fucking-lutely, let's go. But I was like, and then the fact, but when he was holding her and gave her a kiss on the forehead, I was like, had the episode not ended when it did, I was going to pause and go for a walk. Because that, I was like, don't do that to me.
Oh no, it was heart-wrenching. No, I said, I appreciate a show that will throw a twist like that at the end. And you're almost convinced that, nope, that's what's going on here. But of course, you know better. You know they're not going to do that. But that writing is, and the acting and the whole thing of it's so strong that for a moment, you suspend your disbelief and you think, oh, no, that's exactly what's happening.
The buildup. The thing is, the entire episode, they did such a good job of the whole thing when you have a double. And when they were talking and you figure out, like Donna figured out that her doctor was when they were in the corridor, but the doctor didn't realize that it wasn't Donna until it started laughing at him. And I was like, ugh! But like, then when you had the two Donnas rolling around wrestling each other, I was like, oh no, 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 no.
Yeah. So like, no, I mean, those are fun moments though. Again, when you have this kind of story that you get to play with, I mean, you know, the whole, who's the real person in here, like that's such a trope that it's like, okay, but they played with it in fun ways, and then they did the, like you said, the body horror and just the other crazy nonsense like that'll keep you up at night. Like I remember RTD did say that this episode specifically was going to be a little scarier for the kids, so just be warned, parents, this one's a little tough. And he was right, because if I had seen that as a child, I think I would have nightmares for sure.
Oh, no. Like, I even went back online and looked up the scene where it's like Donna's being, is like, my arms are too long. And he's just like, he's like, huh? And she's like, my arms are too long. And then she like shows him her like wobbly weird arm. And I was like, ugh. And then, but the doctor with the arms that were both super long, I was like, I don't know. It's Cronenberg, Cronenberg horror. So I'm super, super excited for the giggle. Because not only because it looks like it's going to be huge and epic and fun, but it also has Neil Patrick Harris hamming it up in the best way possible. Yeah. So no, it's something about Neil Patrick Harris with a German accent.
Yeah, that's interesting too, that they're kind of going with that. Although that might just be like that moment. I don't know. Like, he's amazing. That's going to be great. It's going to be epic. And oh my God, how are they going to land this whole thing? And how are they going to do the regeneration and then in the whole thing in an hour? And then the fact that we're going to get to see Shooty for the first time as the doctor, like for reals, not just as a whatever the heck that whatever thing was at the end of the special or the end of Jodie's era. Anyway, I think all of that combined, it's going to be I just don't know how you do it in an hour. I think this is where I'm like, it's going to be like the Star Beast. It was just go, go, go. I mean, it's going to be so packed and just tense and crazy. And yeah, I'm excited, but I'm also like kind of then sad because we're not getting another one until Christmas, which isn't that far, of course.
Which isn't, it'll be like 2-3 weeks away. So that will, but then it'll be the long wait for the actual season, I think, after that. Yeah. But I'm excited. I can't wait. So also, listeners, if you're excited, please let us know on all of our socials. If you would like to let us know how RTD's name is properly pronounced, feel free to send us a message.
Don't. Only with proof. I don't want anyone else messaging us unless you have primary source proof from an interview where either he says his name or somebody is very clearly like, you know, oh, this is his name, and then and he's like, yes, that's my name. Like, none of these other little like whatever. I want primary source.
Internet that's discourse. Pure chaos. But yes, if listeners, if you're enjoying this, if you like it, as per usual, please give us a review. Feel free to message us. I am super close. I actually set up a Blue Sky. I'm going to set up a Blue Sky account for us, so then we can kind of just X is there. We will still have it. I may still post things on it, but it's sinking ship. So
but the migration is well underway to Blueski.
Absolutely. So with that, everybody have a wonderful whatever time of day you're listening to this. If you're pooping, have a wonderful poop. Whatever you need to do to have a wonderful day. I'm sure somebody listens to us while pooping.
Oh, I'm sure they do too, but I mean, okay. That's a choice.
I'm saying
but have a enjoy your season. And I think we'll be back here very soon for the giggle, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I was like, I had fun with you, Brian. I wanted to spend more time with you. So yeah, we're going to do one for the giggle. And then I think one for the Christmas special. And then we will wait till the next season ends for us to give our full shebang on the new Doctor and the new companion and the first new season of New Doctor Who. And with that, bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.